It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Welcome to the Fastest 15. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Dory Monson. Actually, Nicole, you had a crazy, crazy weekend that you want to tell us all about.
I had let the audience in on I was going, you know, to halfway across the country to get my hair done, and especially it ended up being on a snow weekend. And so I just wanted to give you a little update. I mean, obviously, you know that I made it home safely, but it was quite the adventure. On Friday night, I was on a red eye, and so I flew out in the middle of it, in the middle of the big snowstorm, and I was one of the only flights that went out. I think it might have been one of the last, because they were, I think, running out of de-icer that night or whatever. And so we got out to the runway. I didn't see any other planes coming and going. They blasted us with the de-icer and we took off, and it was kind of the like back and forth on the runway. You could feel the tires kind of spinning.
Wow.
It was crazy. And so and we left late because of the de-icing and all of that. And so I got in, I did not sleep at all Friday night, then got to my rental car place and they didn't have a car because nobody had returned them, knowing that there was a storm coming in and all their flights were delayed. So then I had to wait a couple hours for my car, got a car and had to drive 4 hours. And post snow, they keep their roads pretty de-iced. I drove to Indiana and saw my friend and spent Valentine's Day with them and her three kids, the youngest one I hadn't met because she was just born 6 months ago. So that was fun.
You did all this. You did all this for a haircut. All this
well,
for
just I hadn't seen my friend in a long time, but yes, the timing worked out for me. And so then on Sunday there was news that this other storm was coming in, and so sure enough, on Sunday night the snow came into the town that she lives in, and getting out of her town was interesting. I mean, that took me a little extra time, and it was, like I said, a 3.5 hour drive back to the airport. And then by the time I hit Illinois, it was a snowstorm. And so I was driving in snow. The roads were white. I got to the airport knowing all of the previous Alaska flights home had been canceled all day. So I was just hoping mine might take off, and got to the airport after about 6.5 hours of driving in the snow. Like I said, about 3 hours extra. And then got to the airport. We ended up waiting for a crew for an hour or so, and we did take off, and I did get home about 3 hours late. And like I said, I missed a day of sleep in there, or a night of sleep within my trip, but my hair looks good, and I got
and
to see my
matters.
Friend, and I feel like I can say it now, but I really got lucky as far as all of the flights actually leaving, because, I mean, flights were not leaving. There was tons of cancellations, tons of long delays, people getting bumped, and I'm really surprised that it worked out the way it did, but I made it.
I'm glad that there was no catastrophic events or anything like that, because we all need a hero when those things crop up. And speaking of heroes, you like that segue, The Rock says that he is willing to run for president. I can think of nobody worse to actually run for president than The Rock. I think that we've done these things. I like Dwayne Johnson. I think he's a fine actor. I've heard him pontificate on politics once or twice. It does not really suit him, because he's such a charismatic guy. He's got a great smile. He's a really personable dude if you watch interviews with him. And that is a dangerous combination in politics. Someone who knows very little about government but is very charming and is very good looking and can try to form an argument through that.
Minus the good looking, though, don't you think that's what Trump? I mean, when he first came on the scene, I was having this discussion with a coworker, and they said, "Oh, Trump will never make it." And I was like, "Absolutely, he will, because he's the most famous, and so absolutely he will be the next president." I said that as soon as he announced it, because we are a fame obsessed society. But do you think if The Rock made it, do you think that he would end up being hated just as much if people don't agree with what he's doing, if one, you know, does it pit one side against the other and people don't like him? I think this is another bonus and maybe a PSA, but I listened to Matthew McConaughey's book on Audible over the drive this weekend, and I highly recommend it. Such a good message, and having Matthew read it to me was awesome. But he has mentioned, you know, running for governor of Texas or something, and I think it would be a bad move because they're both so well loved, and at some point then you have half of your, you know, your audience, what, you know, as a film audience, hating you for the decisions you're making. Do you think The Rock would end up the same way, or maybe not so much?
I think that people would love The Rock, because I think that if The Rock was going to tweet anything, not both sides, but I think that the vast majority of American voters, particularly low information voters, they would just love The Rock. In the same way that in California many, many years ago, when the governor at the time, Gray Davis, was kicked out and they had a runoff for the governor, everybody said, well, who's going to be the next person? Is it going to be someone who knows California politics, knows California government, knows California business? Nope, it's going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he came in and he just kind of sort of did a job and then he left, and no one really thinks of anything less of him for it. He wasn't spectacular. It wasn't amazing. But I think that when we do this thing with celebrities in particular, when we imbue them with some kind of secret knowledge as to how something runs, just because they've been involved with a particular industry, I don't see it. Now, I'll give you this. If The Rock came out and he said, you know what I love in my life? I love the freedom of speech. I love liberties. I love gun rights. I'm all for unborn children. And I think that anybody who has a business should be taxed much less. I'd say, oh, wow, I'd vote for The Rock. If he came out and he said that, if he came out and had all the ideas that I agreed with, I'd love him. But instead, he's probably going to be like a moderate Democrat type, I would imagine. I think he would fall in that realm politically. And also, he's so likable, he might just charm people, just hypnotize people with his big glistening muscles. You can't look away from him.
The bottom line is, I think, don't we want somebody that knows what he's doing? And I know that, you know, people will argue Trump didn't know what he was doing. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's the same arguments made for Biden, but don't we want somebody that knows what he's doing? And I don't mean politics, because I don't mean the game of politics. That I don't care about. But somebody that's knowledgeable in what they have to do in that position, as far as knowing foreign relations, knowing economics, knowing these things. And that's what I think that we're voting based on this personality or likability or fame, like I said, and instead of who's qualified for the job.
Well, if we went with somebody who knew civics or knew just, you know, how the system of government is supposed to run in the United States, we'd go for a bunch of constitutional lawyers or people like Rand Paul or Thomas Massey, someone like in that vein,
right,
who's just a real hardline constitutionalist thinker. But those guys don't have the sweet muscles and the hard rhetoric. Those guys are just like normal, average dudes. I think Rand Paul is a doctor. Thomas Massey is an engineer. So the people that you would really want, who really understand what the Constitution is about and how systems of government work, and how they're failing, those people just push them aside and go, no, I'm not interested in that. But you get somebody who's big and loud, who says, I'm going to come in here and fix everything. That's the guy everybody wants. Speaking of, by the way, talking about, we should pay off on The View that we teased earlier, that clip earlier about just The View totally head over heels in love.
Swim.
Head over heels in love with Joe Biden and everything going on with that. Here's a quick audio clip of what that sounded like.
He's adorable. He's so genuine and sweet and lovely and funny.
Good sense of humor.
Everything you want in a man and in a president. You know, he's great. And he's right for these times. He's perfect. Perfect for these times, I think.
That was cathartic to watch.
I'm glad we have him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just decent.
I think it's why he didn't win before, because it wasn't his time, because he was going to be needed later on. And so, you know, I have to say, you know, he's a great riding buddy if you're on the train.
You know? Yeah.
I love riding.
Right.
I'd catch up with him back and forth on the train. And he's just a great guy. He's a real guy. So I understand. I understand talking to him a lot. So I'm glad we got him too, Joy.
And that was after they played a montage of all his appearances on The View. And
Just love that guy.
Yeah.
Just love that authoritarian dictator currently. Just love. Just so great. Just blows up 11,000 jobs in the first day. Just love that guy so much. Just re-enters the Paris Climate Accord that does nothing. I just love that guy so much. So much I love that guy. Can't get enough of that guy.
You know that guy?
I know. You know, he just shuts down all production on the border wall. You know, it's just amazing to me. How could you love anybody anymore? So what they're doing right there is a psychological phenomenon, selection bias, where you, let's imagine that you go into a shop and in the shop there are three paintings and the guy comes up. It's a weird paint shop. It's a weird shop for to go and buy stuff. But the guy comes up and he says, listen, you can have one of these three paintings, and in a week from now, you can come back if you don't like that painting and you can trade it out and you can get a new one. You know what happens almost like 70% of the time, the person who takes that painting home, all of a sudden they go, oh, you know what? I don't really like this so much. So then they take it back. But if that same guy says you get to pick one painting and then you're stuck with that painting, all of a sudden people, their appreciation for that piece goes up tremendously. So when you're told that you can't return something and then you're stuck with it, even if you don't like it, your brain will do this thing where you go, oh, well, I picked it, therefore I liked it, therefore I'm going to find everything great about it. And you can hear it in their own voices that they have no idea what they're talking about. They don't know anything about Joe Biden's policies. They don't know what Joe Biden stands for. But he's so great. He's so great. He's exactly what we needed. It's like they're trying to rationalize it to themselves in real time. And I wish that they would have me on The View. If they could put me on The View for just 5 minutes, give me one segment, I would just destroy those women. It would be amazing. It'd be the greatest television of all time, but they won't do it. They won't have on your good friend, poor Jack Stein. And in fact, I might even get canceled. And speaking of, we talked about this yesterday with John Curley, but the Bachelor host, Chris Harrison, has been kicked out of the show. I don't watch The Bachelor. I'm not interested in The Bachelor, but what happened is that there was a contestant on the show, and it's a historic season. Because the Bachelor is an African-American male. And they got a bunch of white women, a bunch of black women, and they're all trying to go after him at the same time. So one of the contestants, they found photos of her from way back in the day, and she is wearing an antebellum-style dress at some kind of sorority party, some kind of sorority plantation-style party. They found that picture. And then the host, Chris Harrison, was on a podcast and he was trying to defend that. And he was trying to say, well, the woke police shouldn't be a thing. I think we got that audio clip.
Not ready. No, we didn't talk about that one. We talked about the other one.
The one where
his apology,
actually...
but that's okay.
Oh, yes.
But no, I will say that I did watch it. And by back in the day, because just to be fair, you said back in the day, she said this and it was only, she did this and it was only 2018, which I think is part of the issue is they're saying, well, that's not that long ago. She should have known at that point, right?
Right.
So, but I do have that cut for all right, here. I have Chris Harrison for you now.
You know, I saw a picture of her at a sorority party 5 years ago, and that's it. Okay, well, there
well,
goes.
The picture was from 2018 at an Old South antebellum party. So I think, you know, it's not a good look.
Well, it's not a good. Well, Rachel, is it a good look in 2018 or is it not a good look in 2021?
It's because not a big good difference. Look ever because she's celebrating the Old South. If I went to that party, what would I represent at that party?
I don't disagree with you. You're 100% right in 2021. That was not the case in 2018.
He's doing a bad job. That is a bad argument. And honestly, what all he should say is, so what? So what? It's a silly thing to wear. We should all just mock and ridicule this person for wearing a silly dress. That's it. But this whole cancel culture thing, when you acquiesce to the mob, when you capitulate to the mob, they destroy you. He really should have talked to me. Chris Harrison should have come and talked to me, and I would have told him everything that the mob will do to you. You never, ever, ever apologize in that situation. And also his kind of, I don't know, maybe kind of, sort of, back in 2018, but now it's 2021. That is not a good argument. He just should have stuck by his guns and said, hey, you know what? I don't care. She wore a silly dress to a silly party. That's what kids do. She was in college at the time. It should make no difference to anybody whatsoever. But now we make it a big deal. And this is what I don't understand about culture now, where, let's say 30 years ago in the 90s, the greatest decade of all time, in the 90s, somebody did something stupid. What did we do? We poked at him and we said, you did something dumb. And then we all laughed at him. And then we all moved on. We even did that recently with that woman, Rachel Dolezal, who was pretending like she was African-American. Everybody laughed at her and then we moved on. So why can't we do that now? Why do we have to have cancel people, say that, oh, you're done? He's not. By the way, he released an apology that's even worse. This is so cringy. This is so cringy. He says, hello, everyone. I have spent the last few days listening to the pain my words have caused, and I am deeply remorseful. My ignorance did damage to my friends, colleagues, and strangers alike. I have no one to blame but myself for what I said and the way that I spoke. I set standards for myself and have not met them. Yes, you did, dude. You did meet them. You came out and you said, no, you know what? I think it's fine. And then you also said that I don't know and all that other stuff, and that just got you thrown right under the bus. But you set standards that are fine, perfectly acceptable standards. He says, I feel with every fiber of my being, now just as I taught my children to stand up and own their actions, I will do the same. By excusing historical racism, I defended it. I invoked the term woke police, which is unacceptable. No, it's not, dude. It's perfectly acceptable. The woke police is the Gestapo. We need to get away from the woke police. And now, with this apology, you've been headhunted. They got you. You're in there. You can't get out. This is now on the internet forever. What you got to do, if you're ever in a position, let's just say you listening right now, to Cairo, the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein. You're in a situation where the woke mob comes for you. You don't do this. You stay as far away as you can from this. And you stick to your guns, figuratively. And you say, no, I will not apologize. I will not apologize. This is a silly argument to be having. I'm not going to be losing my job over this. This is ridiculous. And his apology, again, it just goes on and on and on with woke language. I have such an aversion to this kind of philosophy. Because it is a philosophical disease. Woke philosophy is a philosophical sickness. This idea that somehow, because you are born of a particular race, you are somehow imbued with certain characteristics, and therefore you are granted certain privileges. Wow. What? Can you picture anything more racist sounding than that? Bull Connor could not have come up with a more racist paradigm to look through the world in. And yet it's spun around and we're just supposed to buy into it. I'm not okay with it. Chris Harrison, come talk to me. I'll back you up. I'll try to dig you out of this hole that you've dug yourself into. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Mr. Dory Monson. You want to find more of my content? Human Genius is the place to find it on YouTube. We'll take a real quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Don't need no cameras to see your point of view. I need someone to turn to. Hey, I guess my heart never learns. No use in fighting the words if you'll yes. never hear when it hurts.
Jack Stein in for Dory Monson. I just didn't want to cut that kid off. What an amazing voice. His name is Benson Boone, and he won American Idol Golden Ticket. He got the Golden Ticket, so he will be going, moving up. I have no idea how American Idol works anymore. I remember the first season, everybody was nuts over that. I think that was Kelly Clarkson and Justin something. I mean, Nicole, you and I are in the same age bracket, and I remember that first season being kind of a historic event of my youth. I watched every single episode. It was amazing. And then they had the second season, and I was like, wait, I thought we were finding the singular American Idol. I didn't realize that we were going to keep doing this. And now it is, I think it's on like season 20 or something. It's just an amazing amount of American Idols being churned out. But this kid, Benson Boone, he's 18 years old, and it's just amazing to me that at 18 he has that just in natural and innate ability to sing. He was a high school junior when a friend recruited him to play piano for Battle of the Bands and asked him to sing. His voice surprised everyone, especially him, and he started singing on TikTok. He has 1.2 million followers, and he's taking this semester off from Brigham Young University, Idaho, to practice. I often wish, Nicole, that I could have some kind of catastrophic head injury and I wake up from a coma and I have that ability. You know, you ever hear about those people that
singing, that would be the one you wished for?
Yeah, it's better than math. I mean, you can't get a lot of ladies with math, but you can if you can sing like that, if you can beat that with put the piano and the sultry voice. I mean, everything about it. So I've often fantasized about having that kind of thing and waking up and being a savant and being able to play piano better than I do and be able to sing better than I do.
It's really cool. I don't know. Like, I watched, you know, when Carrie Underwood was on there and stuff. I think I went through, what was she? She was like 3 or 4 or something seasons in. But since then, I don't know what happens to the winners of these. Like, I think they're all good, and I don't know what happens to the winners of these. And I hope that there's some path he can take to that makes this, I guess, not marketable, but, you know, some... that he can do something with this experience. I mean, maybe it's just an experience. Maybe you just share your talent and then you move on with your life. Or I don't know what we're supposed to get out of these anymore, because I do think they've been overdone.
Yeah.
And they've lost their uniqueness. There's so many different shows and so many different winners, and I'm not sure what this does for them anymore other than gives them their, you know, 15 minutes of fame or whatever.
Some people go on. I know Jennifer Hudson went on after she lost American
early.
Idol.
Super early in. Like, that was in the first, you know, like 8 seasons or so. But since then, I don't know. I can't name anybody. But I hope he does. I hope he can take his gift and use it somewhere, because it's pretty awesome. So hopefully he does give people these platforms to take off from. But I don't know.
Well, the internet has become kind of the new... common ground for people who want to make it outside of mainstream media. Like, if for me, for example, my YouTube channel, I have all my content there. I have my podcast on iTunes. I don't need to go to one source. Like, if I was in a band, I don't need to go to the record label and say, please just distribute our record. Now we can put it all up on SoundCloud, or we can distribute it ourselves through iTunes. The internet has given people the opportunity to do it on their own. And in a lot of ways, it's actually kind of intimidating, because now everything is on you, and you have to be the one who produces the content, and you have to be the one who buys the equipment. But when you have raw, natural, innate talent like that young man and like me, it becomes very easy to you, which is why my YouTube channel obviously has millions and millions and millions of followers at this point in time.
But isn't that the thing? I don't know. So part of it, I do think that this is one of these society... Well, it'll be interesting to see where we go from here, because we're handing the ability over to so many that it doesn't make it as unique as it used to be. So now this kid is one of the 25 kids, right? You are one of the thousands, millions of YouTube people, right? So we're not making it unique. We're not making people stand out, where, you know, people are just kind of getting into this, you know, just group of, this is what I do for a living, but how long does it last? Like, we don't know, because it's new. And when will the next thing happen? And then do you move over to that, or do you have to find a whole new career? Like, it'll be interesting to see where these things go after a while.
I was reading about a kid. He's a YouTuber and a TikToker, and he's on Instagram. He does everything, and he's been doing it since he was 15, just putting out content, putting out content, putting out content. And now he's 24, and he released a video and a statement talking about how he just couldn't do it anymore physically. 24-year-old kid. I know that he's a man, but in my mind, he's still a kid, right? He didn't go to college. All he did was just pump out content, and that was his entire life. And he had to walk away from it all, saying that he just physically could not do it anymore. He was having thoughts of suicide, just at the burnout that he was experiencing. So to your point, Nicole, how much pressure do we put on kids who are trying to pursue a career in entertainment, to the point where, when they should be enjoying the fruits of their labor, they say, oh, I can't do it anymore. I got to get away from all this. I got to step away from all this. I just can't be doing the thing that I love to do anymore.
Right. I think these are all questions that are going to, you know, probably get answered in the next 10 years as technology changes and interests change and attention spans continue to decrease, and every, it makes me worried about these kids that are going into these fields because, you know, I have a friend whose son, I mean, that's how he's making money right now on YouTube. And, but what do you do when that career is not a career in 5 or 10 years, or you have to adjust to it? That's, I don't know. It's kind of a scary thought.
When it's all on you, I think the thing is, maybe we've put too much emphasis on youth being the moneymaker. You know, when we put too much emphasis on this idea that you should be young and relevant and a millionaire, otherwise you're not going to make it. I saw a clip of a young girl. She's 16 years old, and she was something like the number 3 trending on TikTok for however long it's been around. She's been in that top 3 bracket. Someone else came along, knocked her off the top 3. She lost her mind. She's sobbing. She's saying, I'm the most famous person on TikTok. This is a mental illness at that point in time, where she was unable to just be, it's hard to say she's 16 years old to be an adult about it, but she couldn't recognize that systems ebb and flow. So the idea of her moving down a couple pegs in popularity destroyed her life, completely annihilated her. She's like, she's crying, miserable. She came out later and said, that wasn't me. But with the pressure that we put on these kids is, I believe it to be too much in the internet age. I'm Jack Stein, filling in for Dory Monson. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, much, much more coming around. Much, much more. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, proudly sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson. I came across this story and it blew my mind because we're so close to living in a North Korea type state. I don't think people realize how close we are to just tipping over the edge where we're not going to eat meat anymore and we snitch on each other on a regular basis. But Santa Clara University is encouraging students to snitch on party-going peers. Santa Clara University joined a growing list of universities that are encouraging students to anonymously snitch on each other under the guise of the coronavirus pandemic. In an email to parents and students obtained by the Daily Wire, Santa Clara University encouraged students to use an anonymous tip line to inform the university about large gatherings. Under the university's conduct code, students who are caught hosting or attending events with more than 3 households are subject to a fine and suspension from the university. This is what they do in North Korea. They have vans that go around, and these vans have audio equipment inside of them, and they go into your home. They are actually listening to what is going on inside of your home to figure out what exactly you are talking about. In North Korea, you are obligated to snitch on somebody in your town. You are obligated to find somebody who is breaking some kind of rule. If you don't have anything, generally what they do is they make something up so that someone doesn't come after them. So what I see with this is we're not necessarily to that point yet, but you are encouraging people to go out of their way to make sure that everybody's behaving the right way, that everybody's in lockstep with how we're all supposed to be behaving. I understand that COVID-19 can be very scary for a lot of people. I also understand that college students can be very irresponsible. But at the same time, I understand that college students, not very likely to die from COVID-19. Not very likely to die from it whatsoever. So now they're going to be getting a $500 fine and potentially a suspension from the university. I get really tired of the argument where we say, well, it's a private university that they can do what they want. I've used that argument to death with so many issues over the last month that at this point I'm starting to think that it's no longer a valid argument, that we should just say no. No, you should not be treating people like that. We do not live in a police state. We do not live in an authoritarian state yet. People should still have a semblance of their rights left to them. And if people want to gather in a particular space, they should be able to do that. People should just be able to have that way of life. And when we kind of default back to this whole, well, it's a private university and you signed up for it and that's just the way it is, I say, you know, maybe they're banking on that. Maybe they're banking on the idea that they can coach these kids up in such a way that then when they get released out into society, and then it comes out that all of a sudden now in your community, you have to start snitching on your neighbor. Let's say your neighbor's having a party and you got to call the sheriff and let him know. Do you want to live in that kind of community? I don't want to live in that kind of community. It's none of my business when my neighbor has his family over for Christmas. It's really not. My neighbor is a really nice guy. He doesn't speak a word of English, but we get along great. He's a Hispanic man, and he has a big extended Hispanic family, and they came over for Christmas. I like him a lot. I don't know his first name. All I know is that he's a great family man, and he gives me free lemons, and we smile and nod at each other a lot, and that's good enough for me. So am I going to snitch on that guy because the sheriff tells me that I have to, or because there's going to be some ordinance? No, no. What, are you kidding me? No, this is how you destroy communities. This is not how you build communities up. And I get what they're trying to do about, well, we all got to keep kids safe and everything like that. I say treat young adults like young adults. I say that. I find it to be just, it's reprehensible, and they need to reorganize themselves entirely. Bill Gates, speaking of North Korea, says rich countries should be eating 100% synthetic beef. I don't know about you, but I'm a red meat type guy. I enjoy my red meat. I enjoy steaks. I enjoy lamb. Just had lamb the other day. It's amazing, amazing meat. I am not interested in synthetic meats. Now, his argument is that this is going to be good for the environment. It's part of the whole climate change thing. It's a part of it in his new book, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. And this is part of this. When people talk about the Agenda 21 type stuff, which I don't buy into, I don't buy into any of that kind of conspiracy stuff. I see why. I see why they start to go down that rabbit hole. When they read stories about organizations telling people to snitch on each other, and then Bill Gates coming out and saying, we should all be eating fake meat. Yeah, you're going to send some crazy people over the edge. And they're going to start thinking about the whole like one world government thing and the whole globalist thing. People go down that rabbit hole. So I think it's responsible for people to try to dial that back a little bit, be a little bit more reasonable and say, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I Nicole, would you eat synthetic meat that was grown in a lab?
I'm not choosing to eat that. No, I would definitely be more on the, you know, real beef.
Real train. Beef. I'm a real American. I'm a real man. I want real beef.
But no, I understand it's a tool maybe that we can use. Like that's a choice for people who don't want to eat meat. And I respect that, but I don't think we should be forced to eat that as opposed to, I mean, I know a lot of farmers and there's a lot of good farmers here raising good beef. So
Jack Stein in for Dory Monson. When we get back, we're going to be getting into what's going on with QFC having to close 2 Seattle stores over the hero pay, all that and more. And also a little bit from Jay Inslee, all that coming up in the next hour. We'll be right back.
You stink. You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.